Hi, and welcome to the Live Beautifully podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today's episode is so good, you guys. I'm here with Brian, and we are about to introduce our very special guest.
So it's not very often that you get to introduce and have a podcast with friends and have a very candid conversation about what you're going through, what you've been through, and a lot of the commonalities and similarities and just war stories that you can kind of go over. Chris and Lori Harder are a power duo.
That was nice.
We've known them for years and years, and what is so amazing about them is that they have had a long road and long history together, similar to Katrina and myself, 18, 20 years. So we've been, you know, collectively together for so long that we've seen different versions of ourselves, and we've evolved and we have kind of rolled with the punches. And I think that, you know, one of the topics that we'll talk about today is rock bottom and how it actually isn't like the worst possible thing. It's actually an opportunity, and it's just a choice, and there's nowhere but up from there. And these guys are just filled with lessons. Their network and the people they talk to and advise, they have learned so much, and it's such an honor to have them on the podcast today because they are sharing their knowledge with all of us. And frankly, they're just great people. Like, work with the people that you love. And that's something that Kat and I have always believed in.
They have made it their mission to help others live a life of success and freedom and purpose. And you are just going to want so much more from them after this show. So make sure to follow them in the show notes, Chris Harder and Lori Harder on Instagram. Before we get started too, I just want to make sure that you text them the word power to 310-496-8363. They do this daily ritual that they swear by, and then now Brian and I are going to do it. We are committed, and they are going to motivate you every single day to take power over your life. So text them POWER, 310-496-8363. And also one more thing. We're like, hold on.
But wait, there's more.
We're downstairs and we're about to have dinner. We are prepping dinner on...
Oh, we are prepping dinner on the Grill Caddy, today's sponsor. So... cooking, grilling, it's all inherently a messy process, and I'm here to tell you all about it. So,
wait, real quick, before we say anything, it's your product. Like, you created it.
I did.
I know. I just want to make that clear.
It was a problem. Like, literally, I would basically just make a bunch of dishes, have to clean them, spend no time, you know, with everyone while we're entertaining, getting smoked out on the grill. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way. So the Grill Caddy was invented in my little brain. And I said, hey, we need something that creates no dishes and that allows you to not take 58 trips back and forth to the grill. There it is. It fits any roll of aluminum foil, wax paper, parchment paper, plastic wrap, whatever you want to do. And it just works. The simplest ideas are the best ideas sometimes, and this is like evidence of that. So check it out. So head on over to grillcaddy.com, get yourself the ultimate prep deck, and remember that less mess equals less stress, and that is the reason this product exists. So thanks for your support.
It is such a good gift for anyone in your life that loves to cook, loves to grill. It is so genius, so brilliant. And thank you for making today's episode possible. So thank you, babe.
You got it.
And thank you for all of your support. We love you guys. All right, now we're bringing on Chris and Lori Harder. Let's go.
I'm so happy that we're doing this over rosé.
The only way to do it.
It seems very fitting for all of us.
Chris and Lori Harder, welcome to the podcast.
Is this life? We're actually here with you.
So thank you for having us because we're at your house.
In our makeshift studio.
Yeah. We're at their dining room table. Their home is beautiful. I walked in, I gasped, you guys. And then I walked to the back patio and I looked at the pool and I turned around in the kitchen. I looked at Lori and I said, this is so you. Mm-hmm.
That is awesome.
It's like the ultimate stamp of approval. Because we watch you guys and think, oh my God, I could have an ounce of that style.
Oh, I did a high kick in your office. I walked in and I tried to get my foot as like up to the ceiling as I could because I was so excited for you. I know that you've found your way in Scottsdale. Lori and I did an episode before this and we're like, what brought us here? But there's no coincidences.
Mm-hmm. No, there's not.
And I know people say it's like things are meant to be, but they totally are. Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand it when you're in the thick of it, you'd understand on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, my tattoo right here says, live as though the universe conspires in your favor. And it was something that, it's a butchered Rumi quote, completely butchered. And I needed that to keep reframing every single thing that would happen in life, whether it was, you know, having expectation let down, whether I thought I failed at something. I had to be able to train myself to see the silver lining in it. Mm-hmm. And this is just a small reminder to me to always see the upside of every possible scenario. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that defines you and who you are. And I love that tattoo for you. You guys, I just took a flat lay of it. His arm is laid out on his podcast, and it's going to be on livebeautifully.com. So if any of you want to show it to your tattoo artist, you may do so. All right. For anyone that hasn't seen anything from you guys, and this could be an hour or it could be a shortened version, whatever you guys want to do, but tell everyone how you guys met Jim. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was he doing? What exercise? What's he like?
Legs is, yeah.
Caps. He was doing neck exercise. He's going back. And then tell me, did you picture yourselves working with each other as soon as you dated? Like,
first of all, we have two sides of the story and it's not a brief story. So I don't know how much
we can make it brief. And I think we need to start with saying we've been married, it'll be 18 years in August.
Yeah. Known each other 21 years.
Yeah. And so we met when she was 21 and I was 24. I got married when she was 24 and I was 27. Mm-hmm. And it's flown by. I don't know how you feel, but I cannot believe how fast 18 years goes, to be honest.
I remember we had a set of neighbors when we first moved into one of our houses and they were married 10 years. And I was like, oh my God, that's a long time. And we became friends with them. And then 10 years came and I was like, oh shit, it goes by real fast. Whoa.
So we met at a gym in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And Lori was the brand new girl at the gym. And when I say brand new, like day one, she had just moved back from a different city. In your words, kind of collect your life.
So I had just moved back home in with my parents after being out for a couple of years. So I was in a really not good place because I did not want to be moving back home. But just to summarize real quick, I had moved in with roommates. We were all raised in all three of us who lived together in a really restrictive religion. So when we moved out, it was not a good scene. It was like everybody was out being their most wild selves. And I was the only one who ended up having a job and they stopped paying the rent. And there was lots of parties. They were making keys. There was a lot of drugs in my apartment. It was really bad. And I had to go. I called my dad. I said, don't tell mom. But things are really, really bad right now. I said, there's strangers who are sleeping in my house and there's drugs and I need to come home. And so I had about 6 months of that lease left. And I said, but I need to come home and make some money and just get my life together. So it was the last place that I wanted to go was back home because that kind of meant back under my parents' rules. And I had just come from 2 years of not having that. And so
I think for context, your mom had really strict rules.
Really strict rules. Really, really strict. So it was back to like 9 o'clock curfew. She wanted me to go back to, you know, church with her.
I should be 21 and having a 9 o'clock curfew.
So I am moved back home. There's not I'm still paying.
I mean, now that would be great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now I would love it.
I would love to go to bed.
She had me out till 2:30 the other night. And I was like, yeah.
Oh my God. No, what is this? I don't even know what that hour is. It's terrible. So long story short, I was sleeping in my little brother who is 14 years younger than me, his room, because there was not a bedroom for me. And he ended up just sleeping in like my mom's like sewing room / little office space. And so I'm in this bedroom that has sticky stars on the ceiling, Star Wars on the wall, and dinosaurs on my headboard that are glowing in the dark. And I'm like, how did I get back here? So I have always known that fitness is kind of my way back to myself. And I was in an ugly place. I was drinking too much. It was just not a good place. And so I joined a gym. And I'm like, the gym is going to be my savior. This is going to be my place, my sanctuary. And I go to the gym for the first day. And all of a sudden, I sign up in at the front. And the guy who's at the whatever, the check-in guy, his name is Al. And he is very, very, very outgoing. And he says to me, I look at him and he says, oh, you have cop eyes. This is my first interaction.
As she's checking in.
As I'm checking in. And I go, what are cop eyes? And he goes, you can see all the bad things I've been doing. And I'm like, this is really interesting. And this is the only gym for me to join, by the way. So I'm kind of like, this is my only saving grace here. So then he's like, I'm like, oh, okay. So I'd signed up, but this is my first day working out. And he goes, did you know I'm a model? So this was right after this, like immediately after. I go, I didn't know because I've never met you. And he grabs a Shopko flyer.
Think pre-Instagram, right?
Pre-Instagram. So he shows me. Sure enough, that's his body in tidy whiteies, like kind of big belly, but like a ripped belly, you know? Like, and I was like, oh, there you are. Like, there you are, those tidy whiteies. So I check in, go put my stuff in the locker and come out. And so I'm doing curls. And yes, this gets me headed. I'm in the mirror. I have my old school headphones on, you guys, over the top, over the head. They're the wire, like over the ear. I had the Walkman. I had the bell. Oh, yes. I did have a CD player at this time. So it was when they just started. And I had it strapped around my waist.
Yep.
And this guy comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder. And I put the weights down back on the rack. I'm like, he's literally tapping me on the shoulder, you guys.
Mid-set, not me, by the way.
Mid-set. I take my headphones down. I put the weights down. And he's like, hey. I'm like, hey. He's like, my name's Jake. And he points to his shoulder tattoo that says Jake on it.
Same
guy. His own name. Totally different guy.
A different guy from the front desk. So this was a different guy. So this is the second guy. And so points to Jake, like as if he forgets his name often and has to look down at his arm. And I'm like, hi, Jake. And he goes, do you smoke? I go, no, I don't. And he goes, no, not cigarettes. Do you smoke weed? I go, no. And he goes, oh, well, would you ever want to go smoke weed with me and my girlfriend after this? And I go, no. And so he just kind of looks at me puzzled and he's like, okay, like kind of ditzy. And Chris knows Jake, so he knows this is very on par for him. So when I told him the story after, he's like, this is hilarious. And so I'm like in the twilight zone at this point. Now, poor Chris is the third guy to essentially hit on me.
I'm just a victim of bad timing.
Hey,
that's all.
Anything special, you guys. This is just what happens when you're in a small town and you're, you know, you look semi-normal, I guess.
So we're walking out of the gym. And I, of course, noticed her there. But by serendipity, she was parked right next to me in the parking lot. So we're walking out kind of side by side, same time. I might have kind of coordinated that. You know, I'm sure it wasn't a coincidence.
What were you driving?
Oh God, I don't remember. Probably like a Pontiac Grand Prix or something, right? was
that my first
Grand Prix? Grand Am.
Yeah, I started with a Grand Am.
Yeah,
graduated up to Grand Prix.
That's
how I was in the Metro. Yeah, totally Midwest. And so I looked over. It would have been awkward if I didn't look over. So I looked over and I said, "Hey, are you new here?" And that was it. And she looked at me and she goes, "Yep."
No, I don't think
with like the kind of the head snap and just got in her car and closed the door. Yes, you did. I swear to God.
I was angry.
I have evidence. So
it's like not another Jake.
Right. This is exactly. So I got in my car and I remember thinking, oh, she sucks. Yeah. I got in my car. I remember thinking, oh, well, she sucks. And I thought that was it. I'll never talk to her again. And a couple months went by of us seeing each other at the gym and finally at the drinking fountain of all places. I'm getting a drink and I turn around and there's Lori and she felt guilty about how she treated me in the parking lot.
Because I watched him and everybody at this gym like loved him. I could tell. And he would walk in and people would light up and he was like the mayor. And I was like, oh, okay, this guy, everybody likes this guy.
Notice you just admitted guilt about, yes. Yeah.
No.
Yes. Anyhow, and she's like, hey, I never got to meet you. And that was the start 21 years ago of us building this life together. And
I friend zoned you hard though, which was great because I got to know you as a friend for like 6 months.
Yes, I was persistent. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, in these 21 years, we have had the craziest ups and the craziest downs, mm-hmm. and reset buttons and maybe even near divorces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's gotten us through all the different people you become. Just think about it, from 21 to 24, oh, and then 24 to 27, and then to 30 and 33, and then
30, 15 different people, right? More.
You become such different people, you should almost have different names along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what keeps you together is if you choose to grow together, because you're not going to stop from changing. Matter of fact, you shouldn't be obligated to stay the same. You should be changing. But as you change, you got to choose to change together. And we've always had this policy. We've always said that we're willing to try it on for size. And what I mean by that is just like trying on an outfit to see if it looks good on you or not. If she brings me a crazy idea, or if she wants to be a different person, I'll at least try it on for size before judging it, and vice versa. And I think that's what's kind of kept us in the game.
Mm-hmm. And there's been so many of those moments that we learn, or that we have kind of like the tough points for try it on for size, I think came from moments where I was doing something different that you were like, what are you doing? Or maybe you do something that I'm like, oh God, that's not what I expected out of this. Where there are these moments in your relationship where, you know, someone's going one way that you didn't expect. And communication is like the most, it's the most important part of your relationship. Because if you can just talk about it and go, hey, you know, tell me about why you're interested in that. Like, what am I... maybe I'm missing something. I want to understand what this means to you. And that's always been, I think, really big for us, is to go, why does this, what does this mean to you and why? And then when you understand that, it helps you really get on board with it and go, okay, I don't need to love it. I don't need to even understand it. But if it means this for him, or if it means this for me, then I think that I can like let that be whatever, you know?
It's interesting. I think over the, you know, the 18 years married, we had, when the last recession hit, 08, 09, I was in banking, and we were living beyond our means at the time. So I thought all my promotions and all my bonuses would last forever.
Oh yeah. When you're young, you're just like, this is all going to be this way.
Yeah. You know, I lost my job after spending a year flying around, you know, laying off probably 1,000 people one by one by one. And then it became my turn. And I came home and I told Lori, I said, babe, I've got something to tell you. I lost my job today. And in addition to that, we're going to have to sell this house that we just built, and we're going to have to get rid of the cars, and we're going to have to get rid of the rental properties. And really, we've been living beyond our means. And I was so scared to come home and tell her that, because back then my value was as a provider. You know, the old school idea, like, I'm going to be the male and I'm going to be a good provider. And as long as I give her a life where she can be, right?
Still, men still feel that.
Yeah. You know, I told Lori, basically, we're losing everything, got to start over. And she was quiet and she took it all in. But instead of blowing up on me, or instead of blaming me, or instead of doing all that, any of that stuff, I remember the first thing you said, you looked at me after a while of silence and you said, I'm never going to let this happen again. And that really became your launching off point, where you became the Lori that people know today. That's when you got into fitness. That's when you got into everything. So I guess if I'm saying anything, to span all those years together, and I'm sure we'll have more ups and downs in our future, hopefully more ups than downs, you just got to be a unit that says, when you're down, I'll get us. And when I'm down, you get us. And you just got to take turns, you know, lifting each other up and kicking each other back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed by how much confidence, like, it, you may not have even realized it took to say that, but like, you knew, you believed in yourself, and you were very fortunate to be with a woman who believed in herself. And back to a couple of things you guys said, like, everyone at this table here, there's four of us, we've all been together with our significant other for 20 years plus.
Wow.
We've been so many different people too.
Oh, over, like, the last 20 years.
Oh, we've had the added benefit of having like a pretty long timeline to experience each other's, you know, different personalities, let's go on different, like, you know, types. And I think that, you know, when you look back, like, man, we have so much to, you know, be thankful
after
for.
After college graduation and stuff. We have think about
such
the
a rich experience of life together already. And, you know, there's personal and also business. And I think that's something that we'll talk about today, is just what's it like working with that person you've known for 20 years. It's interesting. So it's like working with 10 different people and there's just one of them.
It's so funny that you say too, like, honoring each other's new things that you're interested in. Because curiosity is so important in life and relationships and what you want to do in the future, and playing. Like, we need to play to figure out what fits. And you, it's so crazy too, being parents, and you see your kids playing all day. Like, and you're like, when did that stop? Yeah. At what point did someone say, okay, stop playing, choose one career, choose one thing, and like live with it and never try anything new ever again? And it is so scary. But I remember moving in with Brian for the first time. You don't know this story. And I really, really wanted to launch toneitup.com. He actually came up with the name, but I was like, I wanted so many things, but I was embarrassed to have a journal. And I lived with him for the first time that I would actually like hide my journal of like my goals and stuff. Cause I was like afraid that he.
He's gonna think it's weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a relationship where you feel like you're going to be judged or whatever. And I don't even know if I was afraid of judgment. I just thought like we were moving in together for the first time and he got like the tripod and the camera and everything, but I didn't want him to see my goals. Cause I was like, what if it fails? Whoa. Or, you know, and we had such a strong bond already, but I think that we all do that where we're a little embarrassed about maybe some of our dreams.
Yep.
And then I woke up one day and I was like, I'm going to start leaving out and Whoa. See what happens. And you were fine with it. And it was all in my head.
Oh, I wasn't snooping around reading that. I probably thought it was your diary.
It was like a notebook of my goals and what I wanted to do for YouTube because YouTube was new. But I love what you said because it pulled things out of you that I haven't thought about that in so long. But I'm a big journal. Like everything that I feel like I've gone through is in a journal. But I was so embarrassed. It's like someone finding your diary.
Yeah,
remember the ones with the keys? I should add a key.
Totally. It's this is who you think you are. Mm-hmm. It's that moment. It's the reveal. It's like, wait, so you think you can do this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the opt-in of when you share that, having your partner go, you know, even if at first you're like, okay, you know, I've had moments where maybe it's like somebody in your life says they can do or they think they can do something and your response should work on it right now to have it be great. How can I support you? I see this in you for sure.
This is interesting. When Lori, so back to that timeline, when I'm like, hey, babe, we're losing everything. She said, hey, this will never happen again. She got into fitness. She started to do really well right away in the beginning and that lit a fire in her. And I remember she's like, I want to really take this serious. I really want to get covers. I really want to do all these things that she ended up doing. And there was this moment, this inflection point, talk about like proclaiming your goals and will your partner support you or not. There was this inflection point where I would tell her, now remember, we're starting over financially, so money's a stress.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell her, babe, go for it. Babe, yes, babe, I support you. But then my actions would back it up. So when she would go buy a whole bunch of chicken and a whole bunch of fresh produce and come home with a great big grocery bill, I would complain about it and like borderline harass her about it. Or when she would have to buy one of these, you know, $18 trillion bikinis for a stage.
By the way, it is expensive.
And I was this major point of resistance for her through my actions.
Yeah.
And she sat me down. And this is one of the best things that she's ever done. She sat me down. She said, all right, listen, this is not working. She said, you tell me that you want me to do this. You tell me you want me to go for it. You tell me you want me to get the covers and all this. And I really believe I can. But then all you do is complain when I spend the money or when I have to go to this thing or buy this bikini. And she looked at me and she said, so tell me now, are you either in and we're going to do this or are we quitting? Right now you decide, are you in? Do you support this or are we quitting? And my immediate visceral answer was, oh, we're in. Like I actually meant it that we're in. And I didn't realize that my actions were holding her back. And until you sometimes sit down, you know, first you proclaim your dreams, but then sit down and stand up for them the way she did. And that's not easy to do to your partner sometimes. Had you not done that, who knows what would have happened?
I can't live. And I think people are probably listening, feeling it right now. Like I can't live with the mixed messages. And for me, it was, if there's something in your life that's really holding you back and I wanted him bought in. So it was a moment of me having to actually face off with myself. And go, what you didn't know is I was having a moment with myself going, I have to believe in me. Like, this is the moment for me that I'm going to believe that this can happen. And I'm going to, you know, I have to bring this to you and say, I'm going all in. This is going to be what we're going to do. And we either have to both be all in or we have to be all out because I can't live halfway anymore.
Yeah.
And the halfway life gets you halfway results, which aren't results at all. And I think those were the moments in our life where, by the way, the stories you're hearing are like, if you're in a rock bottom, I think it's the most powerful place you can be.
Yep.
When everything that you thought was going to be gets ripped away from you, I think that's when your ultimate like purpose gets to come out and you get the opportunity to choose to become the person you got sent here to be. And I think that that is what that was for us.
When I lost that career, I was working for the world's largest bank, maybe the most important era of our life, right? Because this is when all this was going on. We were becoming, taking all these different detours, right? And so I was one of the fastest rising executives at the world's largest bank, and I thought it was going to last forever. Hence the whole like spending next year's money and all that kind of thing. And when I lost that career, I thought my life was over as a man.
Like, how old are you?
I would have been 29 at the time.
Oh, isn't that so crazy?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I'm so old. There's nothing left for me. I'm supposed to get it all figured out. There is so much pressure on men.
There's so much pressure on men and women. Men, we like bury it down. Like we're supposed to be strong.
Yeah. There's pressure on women, but we vocalize it. There's groups, there's all these things. We have podcasts about it, but men, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we're supposed to be macho or something. Well, I remember I was stripped of my identity. So my identity at the time was, what was my title? What was my next promotion? And how many people do I lead? And I stripped of my identity. I stripped of my purpose. I was stripped of what I thought was important, being a quote provider. And I felt like an absolute loser, like a shell of a partner to Lori. And I remember having so much insecurity around, is she even going to want to be with me going forward? Because I had no plan. I didn't know what I was going to do next. Mm-hmm. You know, my only experience is banking in a banking recession. And if you remember back then, it was like the end of the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the thing about where I'm trying to bring this is, when you are at absolute rock bottom and when you're stripped of everything, mm-hmm. either physically or mentally or both, it feels like garbage in the moment. But the truth is, it's one of the best gifts you can ever be given, because you get to choose again. You don't get to choose again when you got momentum. You don't get to choose again when everything's going your way. You don't get to choose again when you're stuck on the freeway and you're going, you know, 80 miles an hour. But when you're forced to sit out and you're stripped of everything, you get to choose again. And I remember saying, how do I want to add value this time? How do I want to show up this time? What do I really want to do that would make me happy this time? And it's just, you got to look back at those moments. And if you're going through it right now, you got to understand, you're going to look back on this moment and it's going to be a gift. It's not going to last forever.
I think we have a teaser for the episode right there. You guys, we're pouring another glass of wine. But when we first got here, Brian, of course, like he's an inspector. You can hear the wine pouring. And he was just like looking at the beams of the ceiling and looking at the hardware and trying to solve any problem they have, like, oh, if you want to do this, you can actually sandblast that. And then he like, oh, let me look at the fridge. And he's like, is this what you guys eat? And then he went in the pantry.
Oh my God. No, we do. I ate the salted roasted pistachio.
Where are you from? Where were you born?
New Hampshire.
Okay, so this is like Midwest love. So you know that you are in the inner circle when you walk into someone's home and you go in their fridge and you look at their pantry and you see how they live. And that is literally, it is the sign that you are like in the circle.
It made me
so happy.
If you're wondering how they live, they drink a lot of fluids and I don't know if they eat, but DoorDash.
There's more dog food and fuel for those puppies than there is for you guys.
We're
as humans.
Really working on it, you guys. Yeah. No, it's a thing for us right now that we are trying to get DoorDash back to healthy, which actually when we do order DoorDash, it's usually healthy
ish.
But we're working really hard to try to get back to that. Actually, we're not working.
You bought an air fryer and it's been sitting there for a month.
Yeah. She's using it tonight.
I bought an air fryer and I did it on Amazon, so that wasn't very hard. So
talk to me about that time. And 2007, well, we're going into recession and a lot of people, especially men in relationships, will feel shame. Mm-hmm. How did you sit with your shame and how did you come out of it? Because shame is such a horrible feeling, especially for men who don't talk about, suicide rates are higher for men. Men don't share about their feelings or if they're actually thinking about ending their life. And it is a problem. And it's going to be even greater over the next couple of years.
It's interesting. You know, I just got done saying I was totally stripped of my identity and felt like a shell of a partner and had no value and was afraid that she was going to leave me. And add to that, I had gained like 30 pounds at a time. So I didn't even feel like a sexy partner. Like, I mean, literally rock bottom. Mm-hmm.
But did you also feel like maybe you had something to live for because you had her?
You know what's interesting? The fact that she was like, I'm never going to let this happen again. And then start taking all this action. I felt like this feeling that she had my back and she was going to carry us for a while. And it almost gave me permission to take some time to figure out how I want to show up again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you asked about what I do, who do I talk to? I didn't have the type of friends that you talk to about this stuff back mm-hmm. then. It was just like bros. And, add to that, this was probably what, 12, 13, 14 years ago. So it wasn't even widely talked about for men yet.
Back then. In the Midwest, it was not.
There weren't podcasts. There weren't anything like that.
Started looking at your feelings.
Yeah. And so I was probably in a dangerous position because I didn't have many people to talk to about these things. But I remember this is when I found self-development. There was some kind of event coming to town. And one of my coworkers had been before. And he's like, hey, this thing's coming to town. You should go to it. And I remember thinking, why would I go to something like that? Love Even though I'm hurting inside, right? And I brought it home and I told Lori, and you know what's funny? I wonder why I told you. Subconsciously, I must have wanted it.
So I remember the story. I was asking for it because my panic attacks were getting so bad that I was starting to not want to be around people. So I started getting so socially, so much social anxiety that before we would go out with anyone, I hate to even say this, but I was drinking 4 or 5 beers. Literally before we would go to dinner with people. And then at dinner, I would drink like 4 or 5 more drinks. Mm-hmm. And what's sad is this was kind of socially acceptable in Wisconsin at the time. Mm-hmm. And so my coping mechanisms were so bad and I had such big dreams that I knew that these were not working well together. So, and I wanted to be a speaker. I wanted to be out in the world, but my anxiety and panic attacks had gotten to a point where they were debilitating. So I'd asked Chris, I said, I don't know who to ask, but would you just go to work? Because I'd never been in corporate America. Like I never even knew what that looked like. I said, would you just ask around your office if anybody knows if there's like a therapist or an event or something I could go to? So you started asking about it and your coworker told you.
And the most unlikely guy, like of everybody in the office, the guy that would get drunk and naked at their office. So I'm telling you, so many of the people that change your life are the ones that you don't expect. So I asked around and he's the guy you think would make fun of you for asking. He's like, dude, I got it. You got to go to this thing. It's called Landmark Forum and it's coming to town. And so I came home and I told Lori. And she said, we're going. And I remember tickets were $600 a person back then.
Wow.
And
a lot of money.
We thought it might as well have been $6,000 a person.
Oh, yeah.
Like to us, that was a ton of money back then. So never been to self-development, have to spend this money on these tickets. And I went and I remember thinking, and I'm not proud of this, but if you've ever been to something like this, you know, people take turns, get up on the mic and they share their problems. I remember thinking, oh my God, these people have so many problems. I'm glad I'm not like them. Now, remember, I'm riddled with problems. This is like me in denial, me just being your typical guy. And I went from judging everybody that first day to the third day, having so many breakthroughs and such a different perspective on life and learning things like nothing has any meaning other than the meaning that you apply to it. And the concept of stories, you know, building stories around things and you find evidence to support what you want to believe. All these things are fundamentals of how we live today. I wouldn't have found that without going there that weekend. And that became the tipping point for me just wanting to go all in and find as much self-development as possible. So the short answer to your question would be now this stuff is readily available. Back then, there weren't podcasts. Mm-hmm. There weren't as many books. They weren't accessible on audio, right? It's not like it wasn't prevalent for men to talk about this stuff the way it is today. Today, there are a lot more choices. So if someone's hurting, if somebody feels like they've been stripped of their identity, someone's scared, go seek all of these different modalities to dive into some form of self-development until you find the one that fits you.
I feel like if we can offer anything from now being old, it is that those are the moments that really have made us. Without those moments, we would have never gotten to deepen our relationship, gotten to like find these things that you're not seeking the stuff that changes your life until these things happen. And so if anybody is sitting in it right now, like I believe those are the gifts. They just are. They're the tipping points that make you do things you would never do. They're the things that make you go and seek people and like figure out these skills in your marriage and how to communicate that you would never normally need. So those are kind of my favorite parts about our marriage and just friendships and relationships are those moments that are like, what now? Never thought I'd see ourselves here.
Well, it's interesting that you were struggling with your panic attacks, which I only started having those within the last couple of years. And if any of you have never had a panic attack, it's like the world feels like it's ending and you cannot move your body. And you were looking for something and you gave him permission as a male to ask a male colleague if there was something happening. Mm. And he had a breakthrough all weekend.
Interesting.
And he wouldn't have gone through that. It was like giving permission to each other as a couple is so important in a way that maybe if you express your needs, the other person may need it even more.
Yeah. Wow.
And you don't even know.
Oh, that's so cool.
I'm also a big believer now. When you express your needs to other people, you're actually giving them a chance to use their gifts.
Yes.
If you hold it all in, if you don't ask for help, if you don't express your needs, you're actually robbing people around you that could feel value. Like people have a chance to add value. You're robbing them of that opportunity.
This is such a theme though. This came up on our podcast that Kat and I just recorded before this is the closest relationships I have in my life is because one of the parties came to the person and was vulnerable and said, I either need this or, you know, this is where I'm at, or can you come help me this weekend on this project? Like those were the moments that have made my best friends is because we had to lean on each other so hard. Wow. Like one of my best friends was created, Lindsay Schwartz, was because we were doing an event together. But during the event, my dog died while I was not home. And she saw me in the most horrendous, I don't have children. This is my first dog. It happened while I was away.
It was like our child. Yeah. You want to talk about a funny full circle thing? So Lori's away at this event, can't come back. I have to put the dog down. Who comes to spend the day with me? Brian. I don't know if you remember this or not.
That was like a rough day.
Circle.
And we didn't even know each other that
well at that
point, but for whatever reason, I just like, he
and you know. So my question is, because this proves my point, because I'm bonding with one of my best friends while I'm gone and you're with him. Did you feel like you guys got way closer because you got through a hard time?
Absolutely.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
For sure. That became the bond. That became the foundation right there, you know?
And letting you, Chris, see, or like letting Brian see you in that really vulnerable time is like what makes relationships.
Yep.
So the things that we think will make relationships are actually not. It's like the moments when someone can lean on you, when someone needs you.
It's almost to me, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but an honor for someone to call and ask for help.
Oh, yes.
And it's like, wow, they trust me with this. Yes, I'm in. What do you need? And you drop everything because you're like, I'm going to do this because this person actually really cares about me, obviously, because they want me to come into their most, you know, their darkest moment.
It's maybe the highest honor to have somebody trust you in their time of need, right? Lori taught me something a long time ago. I feel like I learned all my best things from Lori. There's a key to it.
Stop. You're so cute.
Her love language is words of affirmation. Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, you write me a card, I will cherish that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if I get her a physical gift, she's like, eh.
Like, what's this?
Yeah. I mean, I'll take a
no, where I got her was our wedding vows. So like I had just met her and a couple months later I went to Australia for like a study abroad semester and all that. And I had a journal, probably because I saw you journaling or something. And I actually wrote like someday I'm going to marry you and like put all these things out in the world and then read the journal entries. Like
I had written my vows 5 minutes before I walked down the aisle. Brian wrote his vows 10 years
before. Oh, my gosh.
My God. Oh. Anywho, that's for another episode.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask about your love languages.
I love the dichotomy between the two of you. I think, you know, we're the same way. This is the mark of a good partnership. You said that, you know, you had fun and you partied and he was like extra good, you know, back when you first met. You're the type to write your vows 5 minutes before, so am I.
He was like, I need 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
It was intentional.
Those are the relationships that weren't good. Yeah, it's a completely side random thought, but people always ask, hey, you know, how do I find a partner like Lori? How do I find a partner like so-and-so? The truth is, you don't find somebody like how we are now. You find somebody that you have a few common foundational things in common with, right? Ours was fitness, working out, and we were both big dreamers. And then somebody who also has extreme opposites of you, instead of trying to find a perfect match, because it's those opposites that makes the other person interesting, and they have something to add to your value, to your life, right? They kind of fill your gaps.
And they pull things out of you that you wouldn't have necessarily. He wouldn't dance. And then now he's like the life of the party dancing, little happy feet. That's the beautiful part of a relationship, is that you can also complement each other and your qualities, and then pull things out of each other that you didn't necessarily see yourself. And that's such a nice thing about you guys, is like, one of your greatest qualities is you see someone and their potential. You know, if things push you down, you having a partnership or a friend or anything, that's so important in friendships too. So thank you guys for being those people for us.
You know how you run parallel lives, and it's like you guys are living your life over here and we're over here. And sometimes once in a while we intersect, but our journeys haven't intersected a lot, but at the same time, we're on the same road. And what's funny is, like, I have these people in my head, and you're one of these people and couples who have always inspired me along the way. And
bar setters.
Yeah, definitely bar setters. Like, you guys set the bar on what, you know, even relationship wise, I feel like you guys have been out there, and the importance of even being vulnerable and showing what's going on in your lives and just in your business and being, I feel like you've been showing the journey and been fully you. And I think that has been just like so inspiring, knowing you guys.
I've got a great tangible example. First time you guys had us over for dinner in your beautiful Manhattan beach home. Oh, I remember
my favorite house.
I got there and I was watching Brian be the ultimate host, the ultimate cook, the ultimate decorator, the ultimate everything. And I left, I don't know if you remember, in the car, I'm like, oh, I gotta fucking step it up.
Yeah, and I was like, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, I was like, I'm seriously, it was a wake-up call. It was a wake-up call. We talked about it.
Love language is entertaining, though.
Oh.
I could appreciate that. And also, after being married for this long, like, so appreciate the things that you do and your unique gifts for not doing that. I'm like, that's not his zone of genius. He'll never be that. So I'm not going to hold him. I'm not going to hold him to that whatsoever, because I don't want him to go to something and hold me to something. And I'm like, hey, you know what, Chris, love me for me.
Yeah, did you see what she was doing?
Yeah. Did you see how dressed up she got? I was like,
Brian got the nickname of dad in college by his own roommates.
Oh, wow.
Because he was not only making sure everyone was having a good time and the doors were locked and not getting in trouble. He lived with the basketball players, but he'd
come in and read them bedtime stories.
Yeah. He was like, do your dishes, you guys, wash your, they were all athletes. So like, wash your clothes. Yeah, right? It smells in here. No, he should have been an RA. He was basically an RA with a bunch of athletes and he was like the guy studying management at Bentley. So, and they would all be like, oh, dad. And when I first started dating him, I'm like, oh, that's funny. And then all my girlfriends, without knowing that we didn't mix and mingle friends yet, all were like, hey, dad. Cause he was like, keys, phone, wallet. Do you have your purse? Making sure we're all taking.
Funny.
And then like,
are you hungry?
Yeah. Is your glass filled? Like, do you need anything? His love language is making sure that everyone in the room is taken care of, but also safe.
Acts of service.
And protected. Yes. Oh my goodness.
So is your love language acts of service? Do you like that?
I just love receiving it.
Yeah.
Well, there's the love language.
You can feed me, babe.
No, I and think the love language is actually helping other people.
Like, I know.
You get so much out of particularly helping women like experience their best, most confident self. That is,
I love nothing more than seeing my friends thrive and feel powerful.
Like, names of, like, we were on a walk. I distinctly remember this, and she's like, "What should I name this podcast?" I'm like, "Duh! It's like, name it what your mission is, the emotion you want your listeners to feel. You want them to live beautifully, whatever that means."
Oh my God. I love when my girlfriends feel beautiful. Like, there's nothing better. I just want to be
I just want to set up photo shoots. Actually, I'm doing it. So
I'm going. Sure.
Yeah,
just inviting myself.
Come, because we're doing a whole content shoot. And I told my sister-in-law, who's a photographer, Katie Scott, Catherine Scott, photography. Very shout out.
It makes it feel, I think she's from Katie Dean on Instagram. So
yeah. And whatever your Instagram,
you got to change
that's a really game. Katie's, she's in my phone still as Katie Dean's, but she married Brian's brother and now her sisters, which is amazing.
Oh,
and
I
like,
love them.
Do you want to set up a shoot? But like, how fun to help with hair and makeup and make people feel so beautiful.
We are so similar on that.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's just, it's nice. Mm-hmm. I would love to be, I don't know, maybe the future I'd be on the other side of the camera and help women in all ways. Like, not only feeling beautiful on the outside, but on the inside. So
just think about what you were doing back in college, like when we met. Like, you were like head trainer at the gym at Keene State. And you were also where every one of your girlfriends would go to get ready and have their makeup, their hair, their clothing all figured out before, like going to the railroad bar. Shout out to the railroad.
Yeah. Go out with like a wet head. They just got out of the shower. I'm like, let's blow out your hair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just want everyone to feel pretty and feel confident and smart and
monetize that. If you can monetize doing what you love and helping other people, mm-hmm. that's the formula. And people get stuck. They choose jobs, they choose income sources saying, well, you know, I don't really think you could monetize X, Y, and Z, or, oh, I feel guilty charging for X, Y, and Z. And then they get stuck. They get stuck in a job they don't want to be doing. They get stuck in a salary that they are totally misaligned. If people would only say the way you were so passionately, oh, I just want to help people feel beautiful and do this and that, and make that their career at the same time, that's a win-win for everybody.
Money is an act of faith. You put money up and you say, I am putting, it's money where, you know, put money where your mouth is. It literally says, I'm gambling this. I'm putting this down because I believe this is where I'm meant to be. This is what we're meant to do. And I'm going to put this here. It is literally putting your flag in the ground.
I've got examples of where we spent money where we never should have, but it worked out because it was an act of faith and demonstrating abundance. Buying those two $600 tickets when we were completely starting over financially. Matter of fact, so I got a big severance package. We had to use all of it to pay off debt. Still had debt left over. We had just built this great big house that we had to short sell. I like to say I made short selling cool because I did it before everybody else was doing it. And we had to sell all of our furniture on Craigslist that we had just furnished the house with, right?
Just by.
So one by one, cars would pull up in front of the house and people would come into the home. They'd bargain for the couch, they'd bargain for the TV, they'd bargain for whatever.
Pennies on a dollar.
Yeah.
Pennies.
But here's what happened. We had just enough cash by doing that to prepay 1 year's lease on this really expensive condo building down in uptown Minneapolis at the time. Now, the condo that we got in there was a mother-in-law suite. Literally, it was somebody's extra unit from their unit upstairs. This was downstairs. And they put it up for lease. And I was able to prepay 1 year's lease on that so we could have the runway to reinvent ourselves and figure out how are we going to make our comeback. And there would have been better places for me to put that money. There would have been textbook smarter places for me to put that money than prepaying that place. We could have stayed in a much cheaper apartment or condo. But I knew that place was going to inspire us. I knew that place was going to make us feel abundant. I knew that there were going to be connections and people in that place mm-hmm. that gave us ideas and helped us with our comeback. And guess what? There were. Like, shout out to Nick Larson still to this mm-hmm. day. He owned a hedge fund. He's like 27 with a hedge fund. And he's like, oh, let me teach you really about money and how it works. I wouldn't have known Nick and gotten those lessons without fighting our way into that building that we should have been. And so whether it's a ticket to an event or whether it's a certain place that you feel like you need to live or whether it's a plane ticket to New York to do the interviews.
Got to be in it and around it.
Sometimes you have to make these, quote, irresponsible demonstrations of abundance to stick your flag in the ground and say, here's where I'm going or here's what I need. Mm-hmm. And it'll absolutely pay dividends when you do those brave things.
Yeah. I just want to share one more because when we had started making some money with network marketing, but we were by no means doing great whatsoever.
And I wanted to host women's events and also do like personal development, women's events. The main thing was doing events. I was going to a lot of personal development events at the time, and I wanted to give that back to other women. And I believed in them so wholeheartedly because of what it had done for us. And I wanted to learn how to do them, and I hadn't heard of anybody teaching how to do them. And I loved Jack Canfield at the time, and he had done Chicken Soup for the Soul. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but I had subscribed to all of his emails, and he had sent an email out that said train the trainer, and he was only taking 70 people for this train the trainer. And if you took this course, you would learn how to put on events and be able to take people through meditations and workshops.
You were definitely a first mover in that.
I was definitely a first mover.
Yep, you were.
And which is brave. So he sent this out, and I was like, this is me. I need to like know how to train these people. Oh my God, I want to do meditation. I want to do all these things. And so I click on it. I'm bought in. I'm reading the email. I'm like, I am doing this. I was so committed. I click on the link to see how much it is.
$25,000.
No. I know where I was at the moment. I was in Santa Monica. I was in Palisades Park. I was on a run. And for some reason, like, I think I had my like dings on for my email or something. I don't know why I looked at it. Maybe I stopped because I was tired. I have no idea. And I was reading this email, and I was like, I knew I had to do it. We didn't have the money.
Yep.
Did not have the money.
She was so scared to tell me.
And I tell him, and I'm like, I'm going to do this. I committed the moment I read the email and I saw the price. I'm like, I'm doing this.
By the way, she didn't ask.
I didn't ask.
She informed me. And I mean that in a positive way.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. There are people listening who are like, you either know or you don't.
Yeah.
You either know or you don't. And I knew that if I did this, that I don't know where this came from, but I don't know if this quote like literally came from this moment, but it's something that I say all the time, like, because it's who I am and how I have to be. You have to put so much on the line that your higher self is forced to come out. This was my first moment of putting so much on the line that my higher self had to come out and become the woman who could either make this much money and live into this, that it, like, it's ridiculous thinking about it. We did not have 25K. We did not have 5K, but we put it on a credit card. I went. I have never been more scared at an event in my entire life. The whole thing, I felt like fraud through the whole thing. But at the same time, it was like, this is what you do to become the person that you know you're meant to be. So that was a huge thing for us. That was a huge leap of faith. That was the moment when money became very real, like, as in money became this, like, put your money where your mouth is. And if I put this money down, this means that I have to show up as the person who I need to become, who I need to be, to make this happen. And that was a huge moment for me.
And I also want to make sure we enroll everybody, right? Because
the
example was a $25,000 example, which is a good, powerful one. And then, you know, we had the example of the $600 tickets, and the example of prepaying the 1 year lease by selling all of our furniture on Craigslist. Your question originally that kind of brought some of those stories out was, what can somebody do? And the point of those answers was, well, you can get brave and stick your stake in the ground. But I also want to address people that are like, I don't have $5. Access to self-development, access to business knowledge, access to learning has never been easier or a lower barrier of entry than it is right now. Like right now, kudos to all of you listening to this podcast, because it's free to listen to the podcast for the most part, as long as you have internet. And you can get so much value. You can learn everything you need to learn. You can get all the inspiration you need to get. All of the podcast hosts can be your accountability partner, metaphorically speaking, to kick you back in the game when you need it. But you got to be intentional. You got to download it every day. You got to hit play every day. You got to do it when you don't feel like it. You got to build it in your schedule, and you got to be consistent about it.
Our goal this year is to listen to multiple podcasts every day. Mm-hmm. And I love your, what is it called? The Power Nine.
Yeah.
So share that with Brian.
Power Nine is 3 things you're grateful for, 3 things you're excited about, and 3 things that you're manifesting.
For the day.
For the day.
And we do it out loud to each other. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're secretly saying it.
Non-negotiable.
So we go for our morning walk, which is also non-negotiable. And I got to be like real. Like, most of the time we don't feel like doing it. Either we're still groggy, or we already had a mini argument, or the dog's pissed on the floor, or who knows what. Something has already happened, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
So We don't feel like it most of the time, but one of us will always say, all right, come on, time for the power nine.
Yeah.
And there's almost anger sometimes as a reaction out of the other person. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, we do it. And by the end of doing that simple thing, 18 statements, right? Nine from me, nine from Lori.
Takes about 10 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Changes everything. It changes our perspective. It changes our mood. It changes our feeling. It's, guys, doing the right things that'll propel you forward, they're not difficult. In terms of executing them, they're actually quite simple things to do.
Yeah.
Getting yourself to do them is the difficult part.
Yeah.
But if you would just take that extra step and do the rather simple things on a consistent basis, you'd be amazed at how it changes everything.
Mm-hmm. It's so good to hear that there are days, most days, that you don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Because everyone has their shit, mm-hmm. pun intended, like a dog that takes poop out of a litter box, for example, smears around that, or a baby. Yeah. There's always going to be that. I mean, we all just have so much stuff. But if you have your non-negotiable, and a good partnership is where one of you says, we got to go. So there's mm-hmm. always, you know, and if you're on your own right now, you've got to do it. And mm-hmm. we can be your people to make sure that you do it. And we can hold you accountable too. But if you do that every day, it could change your life. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we're going to start doing it. We'll check in with you guys.
And you're not going to feel like it.
We're going to be annoying to text you.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Little side note, we were sucking boogers out of an 8-month-old's nose every 2 hours for the last probably 48 hours. So that is like, just, we don't want to do it. And like, how are we going to talk about the power of nine when we got a sick child?
Yeah.
And like, copy. Literally.
Sucking
you don't want
sucking.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you so grateful for
multitasking.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful I get to suck boogers out of this baby because we dreamed of this baby. That's how sometimes our power nine starts.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm so glad I got to clean shit off the couch this morning because I wanted this second dog so badly. And that's sometimes how they start.
It's funny because, you know, you mentioned you're sucking boogers out of your baby, you know, every 2 hours and it's not fun. It's hard to have gratitude in that moment. But then you got to remember there's always, and I'll just use ourselves as an example. Lori and I are trying to have a baby and it's been a very long journey. And we wish we could suck boogers out of a baby right now.
Right. We wanted to talk about this. And thank you guys for, obviously, we checked in before we started recording mm-hmm. to be able to talk about this. And you haven't, right?
We haven't talked about this at all. Wow. Not publicly, period.
No, you guys, this is it. This is living beautifully, but living messy, living sad and living heartbroken, but pulling yourself through. And I'd love to talk to you guys a little bit about, you know, your fertility journey. Lori, you're talking about you spend so many years trying not to get pregnant.
You really do. And I you know, it's interesting. There's so much, you guys, around getting pregnant and around being even with your partner and just all the things having children. Like, I come from a really religious background and a restrictive religious background. So I think there's a lot of things even around sexuality for women that are a lot. And I think with our fertility journey, I just haven't shared it at all because the whole conversation for me has been like, should it be sacred? Should it be shared? Should it be, there's a lot of pressure on the whole conversation. And so when Chris and I first started trying to have children, I just immediately, for me, because I spent so much of my life trying not to get pregnant, I was like, well, I'm going to get pregnant right away.
That was going to be easy.
I'm going to think about it and I'm going to be pregnant. And for those of you listening, I'm 42. I don't feel 42. I think I'm 35. I think I'm 30. I don't really know. Age starts to become, like, you guys know.
Stops
like,
mentally at a certain age. Yeah.
Yeah. So
everything should stop at 16 for me.
You know, Chris and I, because we went through what we went through financially, I think that we, you know, in me coming from parents who had gone bankrupt, and then also us losing all of our money and all of our things, for me, finances were really big and they were really important. I didn't want to have a child, come into a household that ever thought about money. I wanted money to be a conversation about energy and what was possible. Meaning, I don't want that to sound too woo-woo, like, around, I wanted money to be a a positive thing. I wanted it to be looked at as something that was very possible for them and something that was a part of our everyday conversation. And so for us, we spent a lot of time healing our past and focusing on our businesses and making sure that we felt really solid. I didn't want my child to come into a household that felt uncertain about abundance. And so for us, we put a lot of our career first. And there could be a lot of anyone who is maybe thinking of putting it on hold or whatever that looks like, you know, for Chris and I, we waited. So we waited a while. And so I think when we found out after deciding we wanted to try to get pregnant and then realizing we couldn't right away, because we tried for about 3 years naturally and we just did not get pregnant. And I was like, how is this possible? You guys, I'm a bit like spiritual as well. I was doing all the things like, oh, this is the night. I'm going to get pregnant. This, how's it going to be? God told me the sun and the moon and the stars, they're all aligned. This is going to be how it is. And I just really thought that if I thought about it and manifested it and really just, I felt like there were some moments I felt it. Like I really thought I was pregnant and it didn't happen for us. And so there's some disappointment in there. There's some like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my body? And I tried not to go there as much as possible. And so for you and I, there might've been a little guilt around, did we wait too long? Mm-hmm. And you have to cast mm-hmm. all those stories aside.
It's interesting because you know, she mentioned she's 42, I'm 45. So there is some of that guilt around, did we miss our window? Did we screw this up? And it's interesting perspective. I don't think I've said this to you, but I watch you beat yourself up, almost like you're taking the blame for it. When my perspective is, it's ridiculous because it could be as much me as it is you. And you know, it's funny, both been a doctor and both of us individually are fine. So you never know like what's at play or what's at work. I'm just attached to having a family. So that's my only outcome. I'm not attached to what it looks like or how we get there or anything like that. I'm just attached to the outcome being that we have a family because I love making memories. I'm like, especially lately, ever since my dad passed away a couple of years ago unexpectedly, it's accelerated my drive to be a memory maker for the family. It's my favorite thing to do now. So I think there's some healthy perspective to not being attached to how, but instead just being attached to one way or another, making it happen. But all that being said, and I believe that when I say that, the other day when we found out, oh, there's another round of embryos that, you know, aren't healthy enough to move forward. It was the first time I thought, oh shit. I might not literally be able to carry my DNA on. Mm-hmm. And that was a really sad day. That was a hard one to digest.
We may not ever know what you and I could make together. And that's okay.
Yeah. But we're also not going to give up trying.
Mm-hmm. What you make together has nothing to do with your blood. Mm-hmm. And it has everything to do with your heart.
That's mm-hmm. true.
And nothing will make what you went through make you feel better. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying to you doesn't make it okay. You can be mad. But I will tell you, just from our experience, when you grow your family and you meet whoever it is that comes into your family, however they come into this world, when you meet them and it's their birthday, whether adoption day or however you guys end up deciding, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
And you cannot even imagine it any other way. And when you're in it, it sucks. You don't deserve it. It's horrible and it's dark and it's why is this happening? But I will promise you right now is that years from now, it was always supposed to be them. Mm. Colette is our daughter, and thank God she's ours. It was always supposed to be her.
Like every time we meet her, almost like we're almost.
Brian's crying. We love her so much, you guys. She's our rainbow. She's our angel, and it makes you realize. So when you look at something that you love so much, and you know this through anything that you go through. And you look at something and you love them more than anything you could ever possibly imagine. All the pain that led you to that moment actually makes sense. Mm. And you can make sense of it, which is wild. But and you will get there, however that looks. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to grow your family, whatever it is, you will look back at this and go, oh,
And we talk about that too, where we're like, oh, we sacrificed too many years on our career. We waited too long, or we thought we were 35 when we're 40. And, you know, and you can always look back, but you have to move forward. And we're here for you. Mm-hmm. And all your feelings are valid. Mm-hmm. But you guys are going to be the most incredible parents in so many ways. I almost feel like you guys are also parents to us in little ways where you just pick us up. So it's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
And it's going to, and I can't wait to look back and go, hey, remember that? And then when you look at them in the eyes, you're going to go, oh, it was always supposed to be you.
I believe that. You know, we opened the podcast with my tattoo here that says live as though the universe conspires in your favor, and it applies here, you know, an hour or whatever it is later, universe conspires in your favor. Like all this is happening for us for some reason. It's part of the plan, and we just have to execute on it, you know.
True.
Came full circle. Mm-hmm. I actually love that I didn't go through any of my questions that I but we're gonna have to do many part, like a whole series of us sitting down for wine at a dining room table and talk through things. Brian's still crying.
I literally just love everyone here. That's all.
Everyone listening, we love you. Where can everyone find you guys?
Podcast mostly, Earn Your Happy podcast and Chris's podcast, The Chris Harder Show.
I do something fun. Every morning I wake up and I text out a positive money mindset or like an affirmation. It's because I wake Lori up every morning to an affirmation. I say, babe, I'm happier, healthier, wealthier, more fit than I was yesterday. I make her say it back. I mean, every morning, I've never ever missed a morning. And if I'm traveling, I text it to her when I wake up.
And I copy paste it instead of
that. Yeah, and then I call her up for copying and pasting. That's how
it's working. Okay.
How consistent is.
I'm going to say something real quick. On the way over here, we were preparing questions and Brian was like, yeah, but we don't have to talk about money. We are so uncomfortable talking about money, but you guys, money is freedom. Mm. Money is a way that you can give back. And even this morning, we were trying to figure out how to, you know, ship baby barn clothing over to Turkey for a charity. Mm. And that even that takes money to do it. And so people are so uncomfortable talking about money, and we will do another series and talk to you, because I love how comfortable you make people with talking about it and asking about it, because that is something that Brian and I are so, I don't even know, resistant to. We've never been able to talk about it. And so, and I hope even today opened everyone's eyes, but definitely tune in to Chris's podcast. I'll put everything in the show notes. It's important. Your success is important for your financial freedom and your family's freedom and your ability to help other people, your family. I love how you guys help everyone around you. You're the most generous people. You work hard so you can give back.
Yep.
And that is a gift for everybody, you know, and it's beautiful. So, okay. Love you guys.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into Live Beautifully today. I hope you loved this episode and that you feel empowered, connected, and of course, inspired to live beautifully. Make sure you subscribe so you're the first to know when a new episode comes out. I love seeing your reviews and hearing how this podcast is making a positive impact on your life. So if you haven't yet, I'd love for you to leave a review. I read everything from you and it means the absolute world to me. I'll be sharing your reviews and stories on Instagram at Katrina Scott. Also, for Ask Me Anything episodes, literally anything, text me on my cell at 213-205-3604. 213-205-3604 with anything you'd like to talk about. Title your text AMA for Ask Me Anything so I can look out for your message. Thanks again for tuning in and sharing this with your girlfriends. I cannot wait to chat soon. Let's live beautifully together.